Coming to you live from a little grass shack in the middle of the Pacific Ocean, it's the Junior Kekuweva Jr. Show, starring Junior Kekuweva Jr.
Yeah, my legs sleep.
Join Junior along with the Wayne Borge Band as he makes any guy from Hawaii.
You have no idea.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, Junior Kekuweva Jr.
Aloha, welcome to the podcast. My name is Junior Kekuweva Jr. And, bro, we want to start with the attitude of gratitude because today we got a good show for you. Okay, we call it a mixed bag when we talk about, you know, different stuff, right? You know, like a mixed bag. Back in the day, we said that, right? Or mixed plate. We don't want to say mixed plate because there was somebody in Hawaii who had a TV show called Mixed Plate. And, well, we just want to be original. And that's all that's about. Yeah. But mixed bag. Okay, let's say mixed bag. All right. So, yeah. But attitude of gratitude. First of all, I'd like to thank, like, the people that are listening to us in foreign countries is going off the chain. And we have people in Israel. Okay. We do not show Palestine. Okay. And that whole thing is crazy over there. Okay, that could get out of hand. And that's part of what we're going to talk about too, right? But what we really want to talk about though is thank you. What we really want to say is thank you, thank you, thank you. We are in several countries. I don't know. Let me pull up the stats. So John is actually our engineer. Well, we call him Jay. His name is John, but we call him Jay. But he is, this guy is amazing, and he's our producer and has been our producer for the past, I want to say, the past year and so many months. And so I want to thank Jay. Thank you very much. He said, don't call me John. I'm like, okay. I can see him holding up this. He scribbles on this paper, right? And then he holds it up next door. So they're like, okay, all right. So 42 states, 56 countries. Our last countries were Guam, New Zealand and Turkey. So and right before that, Bahrain. I still don't know how to say that. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be disrespectful, but thank you, thank you, thank you. Also, the United Arab Emirates. People from the United Arab Emirates are a part of the podcast. So we want to say thank you so much because we have see that the reason why those people listen is because I have this guy that I know. Like, I'm not flexing or anything, but he's on my LinkedIn. And he works for the princess of the royal family of Saudi Arabia. And so, in fact, I put up a picture of he and I on my Facebook once. I think I put it up in stories, but we don't flash that kind of, we're not flexing that huge, okay? But anyway, but that's how come they're listening. So they see me on LinkedIn. They're like, hey, who's this guy, right? And then they go, oh, he has a podcast. And then they come right into the podcast. So thank you very much. And yeah. So on today's podcast, we're going to talk a little bit about politics and we're going to talk a little bit about, yeah, what's going on in the Middle East and politics in general. Okay. Now, personally, I have been involved in politics like you wouldn't believe, Hawaiians. You wouldn't believe. So first of all, the kind of politics I was involved in, okay, it's not like running for office. It's not like didn't have anything to do with that. It had to do with the kind of politics that happens in the workplace, okay? Now, we did an episode on toxic workplaces and, you know, toxic environments, right? Toxic work environment. This is not that podcast, okay? But I will tell you that politics sometimes is not fair. It's not fair. And, you know, there has to be, just in my mind, I don't know if it's just me, but for me, there has to be a balance. Okay, so if you're going to do, you know, the politics thing, it has to go both ways. I mean, it has to be even. The kind of people that I had to work with, you know, over the years were very one-sided. It was very one-sided. I was so, like, I was so discriminated against and whatever. And so, you know, where I'm coming from is experience. Where I'm coming from as a life coach, because this is a life coaching podcast, and we're going to try and do some comedy, okay? We're going to try to stick it in there. But I'm coming from a place of a lot of my clients are involved with narcissists, okay? And A lot of them are married to them. Some of them are married to them. Some of them have been the victim of a narcissist, okay? Some of them have, you know, been involved with politics that are slanted against them. So like, no matter how hard they try to do something, right? They get knocked down, knocked down, knocked down. Now, if you listen to the podcast about my Waikiki show, okay, and what that was about and how I manifested the Waikiki show, then you already know that, you know, in my my dealings with certain people, they slanted others against me, and they would do that like on the regular. And this was just out of jealousy. This was just out of, you know, so you, like I said, when you're operating or working or trying to grow in the entertainment world, okay, they knock you down. They pull you down as fast as they can unless they see how they can make money from you. Okay. And then they start to lift you up. But first you sign on the dotted line, you know, that kind of thing. Well, I didn't have to sign on the dotted line. And I had a company. In fact, I had two companies, right around the time that the entertainment thing started to take. And, so that was in radio. So that was the radio thing took first and then the music, you know, I got to do my music. But here's the manifestation part, okay, about that section of it. Let's take a right over here. We'll take you to the right. So what happened with that was I was at another radio station group and I was praying. I was praying to God every day because I was doing production. I was doing radio production every day. Okay. And that means making commercials for radio and for television. We made stuff that went to the TV stations. So, but that was my job. That was what I did. Non-stop production, production, production. So I used all my voices and stuff, and I really added a lot of value to where I was working. But here's your big fat but, Hawaiians. But I just, you know, my goal was not radio. My goal was not radio. I went into radio, and if you listen to my story and, you know, on that, then you already know. But I got into radio because I thought, okay, in my minuscule understanding, right? I thought that, hey, okay, you get into radio, right? Radio, all the music guys are there, all the entertainers are there, right? And then the producers are there, the record companies are there, and then you can get your chance, right? Wrong. Okay. That was not a very good buzzer. Okay. Anyway, let's try it again. Okay, that was a better buzzer. Wrong. Okay, wrong. I know some of you out there going, damn, why did he have to do that? Like, I was just getting into the podcast. I told you it was going to get comedy. I told you. Okay, there's your comedy. Okay, but no, but that's what I thought. See, because in my mind, and this is why I say the how is God's job. Okay, manifestation, the how is God's job, not your job. I thought it was my job because I didn't know manifestation at the time. All I knew was I was going to get into radio and one day I was going to get my shot and I was going to show the producers how talented I was or whatever. And I was going to play the guitar and they was going to go, yeah, you, we can make you a star. And yeah, we can make you, we can get you out there. We can, you know, push you around the world and whatever. And no, no, that's what I thought. That was my 12-year-old thinking. Because when I was 12, I was thinking this. When I was 12, I was working on this manifestation. When I was 12, I was working on the things that I already accomplished. Okay, and I am no longer in entertainment. Have not been. I retired in 2019. And I retired from radio just last year, as a matter of fact. So I'm completely detached from entertainment and the entertainment world and whatever. And a lot of people tell me, oh, no, yeah, you should go sing and go do this and do that and do, you know, whatever. And I said, well, there's only one condition, only one thing would get me back. Only one thing would allow me to go back. And that would be if I did a show with the orchestra, like the Junior Kekoeva Junior show with the orchestra. I could do that, which would be like music and comedy, like they used to do in Vegas a long time ago. And we did that. We were doing that. We were marketing that. And then, you know, COVID happened, right? But luckily, COVID happened the year after I retired because things kind of slowed down. The booking slowed down and everything around 2019. And I said, you know what? I'm done. And so I closed down the Junior Kekoeva Junior Roadshow. We closed doors. We thanked everybody. And you know what? In 15 years, we never missed a show. We rescheduled. We had to, not reschedule, but we had to, we overbooked one time. And we called the people right away when we found out and we refunded all their money and everything. But that was one time. So other than that one time, there was never a conflict. There was never, and people knew that. You know, people not stupid. In Hawaii, people talk, right? So in Hawaii, it was like, yeah, yeah, hire a junior. No, he gonna show up. No worries. Because we made so much money from other people who didn't show up. Anyway, that's the entertainment thing. And that was done in 2019. We closed the doors. We said, thank you. And we really appreciate the local people in Hawaii. I mean, if it wasn't for the local people in Hawaii, like, I wouldn't be anything. I would be a grain of sand on the beach. Like, I would be, you know, whatever. But I'm just saying, right? So now, you know, let's go back to politics, right? So the politics side of everything, and then manifestation is always God's job, right? So I had this idea of where I was going to go. I got into the most politically controlled thing, and it's called radio. I mean, it is like down to the wire. Now, some radio stations and some managers have a different, you know, everybody has a different style of managing. Everybody has a different style of operating. And some of the managers I worked for in my life were awesome. Just awesome people, awesome. And some of them were really tough. And looking back, I wanna say, yeah, some of them were a-holes. But you know what? Here's the thing, right? You can walk away going, yeah, the guy was an a-hole. Or, you know, when things settle down, because, you know, whenever you leave, whenever I resigned twice in radio, two times. The first time was because this radio station had been bought by a bunch of Hawaiian people that told me that I would be an assistant program director. And then after I got all the work done, right, so we had this process, right? I might as well tell you guys. We had this process of putting songs on these things called carts. They looked like 8-track machines. I know you guys, my younger gang is going like, what's an 8-track machine, uncle? Anyway, but it looked like that, right? And so my job, and because I could do production really, really good, I could cue these things up so that when you start the button, bam, it starts, right? Because I knew how to cue it up tight. We called it tight. That meant it was just positioned correctly. And it took me time to do this. I mean, you know, I had to learn how to do this. Then I had to get good at it. Anyway, the first day that I did this, I stayed at the radio station almost around the clock. It was on a weekend. And I got 400 of these carts done in one weekend, which meant I went in on Friday night, right? I worked all the way till like, I don't know, 3 o'clock in the morning, something like that. And then I went back, you know, just enough time to sleep and eat and whatever. And then I came back, worked all day Saturday, all day Sunday, all night Sunday night. And finally, you know, there was these 400 carts in boxes. They were in cardboard boxes. And so, and these were, you know, categorized and put up on the shelf. And so I had done all of the work. And at some point I went in, I remember I went in to see this manager and, you know, he wasn't a radio guy. He was like, I don't know what he was, but he wasn't a radio manager at all. He wasn't a general manager. And everything exploded on them. Everything fell on their face. And this is why you don't make people any kind. And I'm going to tell you why. Cause anyway, so this guy, right? When I went in and I said, oh, so is there any word on, you know, like my promotion? And he said, promotion? And I said, yeah, you know, I was supposed to be the assistant program director. He goes, oh, I think there's a mistake. There's been a mistake here. We said that you were going to assist the program director, and that's why you did all the work you did this weekend, and that's why we're paying you the overtime for the work you did, and blah, blah, blah. And so when I heard that, right, I was like, all right, I'm done. So I'm done. I think I gave it about 2 weeks after that just to kind of see where things are going. And things really didn't go anywhere. I mean, it was just the same. And I turned in my resignation. Now, the general manager at the time, the guy who was, you know, at the wheel of the ship or whatever you want to say, at the hull. And so he was basically not even saying anything. He was in his office and he had given his notice to resign, but he offered to stay on during the transition. So these guys were taking over, right? And they all had worked at this Hawaiian station before. And so that, and it was an ethnic station, so they played Hawaiian music, right? Now they're stepping into a radio station that did top 40 music. So they changed the format. So now it was Hawaiian and contemporary English music. So that's what was happening. And the general manager, you know, he was just there. And so one day I just went in, I took my resignation and I resigned and I gave it to him. And I said, I'm sorry, Rich, I can't do it anymore. And he goes, no, I totally understand. And he understood. And the way he looked at me, he was thoroughly disgusted with what was going on. But he resigned like, I want to say a month later. But he had, you know, he was a nice guy, he was a good guy, and he stayed on just to bridge that gap of transition. And as most good, you know, managers or CEOs would, right? So anyway, these guys go on the radio. Now I'm at home listening to these guys just to see, like, what are they doing on the radio? And this one guy, bless his heart, he was good to me. And he's gone. He's no longer with us. He passed away. But he was on the air. They were doing this promotion, and a couple of them were like chatting back and forth. And it was a live broadcast from one of the sponsors that, you know, sponsored them. And they would talk. So back in the day, live broadcasts were different than they are now. Okay. So a live broadcast back in the day meant that there were several microphones, several people were talking. And they had entertainment going on and whatever at that place. And they would air the whole thing. So you could listen for 4 hours and you could hear the entire live event. Now the way they figured out that, okay, we're losing money this way, right? So they go, okay, to make it more efficient, what we'll do is we'll just have a jock call in on the phone and do a break and say that they're live at such and such and whatever. So that's what a live program is now. When they say they're live from such and such, what they really mean is they're making a phone call. They're making a phone call from a destination, which is like a shopping center or whatever. And then they're in the shopping center, but it's not going out over the airwaves. They're just at the shopping center with a microphone and they're pretending they're on the radio kind of thing. I mean, that's what it looks like anyway. So it looks like that. And, you know, I did it. I mean, you know, towards when things started changing and you had to do that, you know, I did it and I did what I had to do. And, you know, but it was a shame that they didn't air everything over the radio. But if you do that, like, you take up programming time and you also lose listeners, because a lot of people want to hear music. And if they hear a lot of talking, a lot of interviewing sponsors, that kind of thing, they change the station. So that's why. But anyway, we did that. So it started, you know, like that. And I heard these guys, right? And they were teasing the other radio station. So the Hawaiian radio station that they came from, they were actually openly teasing the radio station. Now, they didn't say the radio station's name, but they were like really teasing them, and they came close. They would say part of the call letters, and then, you know, and they would say stuff like KCC China. They would say stuff like that. And I listened to this stuff, right? Now, I gotta say, at that point, when I heard that, I'm like, oh my God. Now, I did not know the law of attraction back then. Okay. I didn't know, but I did know something called bachi. Okay. Now, bachi is a Japanese word, and I'm not Japanese. I was raised Japanese in a Japanese house, but I'm not Japanese, so I cannot tell you like exactly the, you know, thing. But here's what bachi is. Okay. It's kind of like karma in a way, because like you do something and then something hits you. You do something negative or something bad to somebody or something evil and something hits you. And then they go, ah, bachi. You see? So it's not a curse. It's not a curse word or anything like that. But it's like, well, he did something bad and then guess what happened to him? And then look what happened to him, right? That kind of thing. And so they call that bachi, right? And like I said, I'm not Japanese, so I cannot officially give definitions or anything like that. But that's how we knew it. That's how we knew it growing up. So these guys do this stuff on the radio, right? Boy, I have never seen a bigger case of bachi, right? Now, with all these politics and, you know, stuff I had to go through, right? I started to, you know, go look for work elsewhere, and I got another position elsewhere. And then I started working at I started losing my voice right around that time. I had overused my voice. I was singing. I was doing gigs in Waikiki, solo gigs with my guitar and stuff, like really overdoing it. And I was just really tired. And I had this issue with my throat for years. And I want to say it lasted like 5 or 6 years. But during the first couple of years, I needed to recover. And so I asked this guy, okay, and later on down the road in history, right, he was the guy that put me on his radio show to substitute, and then boom, everything went through the roof, right? Okay, so back in the day, right, so he hires me, right, and right after he hires me to this other ethnic station, you know, and I love ethnic stations, and this was a Filipino-American radio station. And then as soon as I got hired, like, he took off and did another job. But anyway, so it was around this time of my life, right? And so after I resigned and stuff, and I heard these guys do this stuff, guess what happened? Well, here's the rest of the story. So what happened was, the guy who sold the radio station to them, right? Turns out this guy had a bunch of losses in the mainland that he sunk into this company that he sold these guys, right? And these guys, it was like what in Hawaii, what we call a hui. So a hui is like a group of people. So when the Hawaiians wanted to do something, right, they formed a hui. So it was a group of people, because they knew that a hui has more mana, or let's say more life energy, or more, let's say, good karma, or, you know, because you get everybody's good luck together instead of just one person. Okay, so they formed a hui. And anyway, this guy sunk all his losses in there, right? Then he turned around and he sold it to these guys. So while these guys, you know, because the deal was just going through when they were doing all of this, right? And I can't help but think, like, wow, you know, when this thing was going through and this deal was being, you know, completed, right? All of a sudden, right, they find out down the road, and it hit the news. It hit the TV news. I was at home one night and I saw the TV news, and I go, bocce. Like, I couldn't help but think. I mean, because that's what happened, right? And I was one of the people that actually, you know, they paid me for my work, right? They paid me for some of it. They didn't pay me for all of it. But yeah, you know, and I didn't care about that. That was not an issue for me. That was neither here nor there. But what was important was that, hey, you know, they said something, they didn't deliver. And then, of course, you know, everything else that was involved. But I thought, wow. And I did not know about the law of attraction. Now, here's the law of attraction. So I'm using this story so that now I can give you the life coaching part, okay? So anyway, that happened. They all lost all of their money, okay? And they never got it back. They never made their money back. And the radio station had to fold. It had to shut down. And there went everything. It just went. So I'm sure that was a, you know, lesson there somewhere, right? But anyway, so that happened. Now here's the law of attraction on that, okay? You don't put it together, okay? When you do something nice for somebody in the morning, and that afternoon you get good news about something, you don't put it together that when you do something crappy to people, right, and then something bad happens, right? Now, a lot of people call it karma. It's not necessarily karma, okay? It's vibration. So quantum physics tells us this, okay? And they also tell us about non-locality. So what's non-locality? Well, non-locality, in a very simple way, I'm going to try and explain this the simplest way I can. Non-locality happens between two humans. Okay, now it happens between particles. It happens between atoms and molecules. Okay, but between humans, they did experiments where you take one person, right, and then you take another person, and you get them together, two of them, and you have them meditate on the same thing. Okay, then you separate them, and they put them in electromagnetic proof chambers. So these, it may have been made out of lead, I don't know, but I know lead is one element that you can't transmit radio waves through, right? So they put them in these chambers. Now, they're totally isolated from each other, And you can't even, you couldn't even communicate with a walkie-talkie. That's how it was. And then they had them think about, so they had one of them think about the meditation. And guess what happened? The brain of the other person lit up, right? Because they had the you know, I don't know what you call it, those brain monitors, whatever. It's not an EKG, it's something else, but it's for the brain. And so they have them wired, right, on the head, you know, that kind of thing. And so they registered, and it was almost as strong as the person thinking the thought. In other words, it was the thought was there, the thought was received, right? The brain fired up, it lit up, it registered on the machine, right? And it wasn't as strong as the person who thought, the original thought, right? But it was there. And so now quantum physicists know that, okay, non-locality in human beings happen. You know, they always knew it happened in particles. Because when you have a particle, they did a slit experiment where they shot particles through a slit, this little slit with a metal plate, and it has a little slit in it. And they fired it through the slit. And when they uncomplicate a very complicated explanation, what happened was they fired through the slit, but they spread. Okay, so like these particles did not line up exactly like the slit in the metal. And then what happened is they found out that a particle can communicate with another particle. And that's non-locality. So in a very, very simple way, what they're saying as well is nothing exists until you observe it. Okay, now you remember that old thing about, like, if a tree falls in the forest, does it make a noise? It's kind of like that. But non-locality, okay, could explain a lot of bachi. Non-locality can explain a lot of things as far as vibration. Because if you do something in the morning, right, and we always say, well, you know, God's going to judge you, or God's going to punish you, or whatever, when you do something wrong. No. You punish you. God doesn't punish. God does not punish. So what happens, right, is you do something vibrational in the morning, okay? Now, it may catch up with you in an hour. It may catch up with you in a day or whatever, or it may come back the next day. We don't know, and scientists don't even know. They don't know yet. They have an idea, you know, they have thoughts on it, but they don't know yet. So they're experimenting with this, and this is groundbreaking research that they're doing. And so, but what we do know is two humans, right, isolated from radio waves, right, because we're electromagnetic beings. So two humans isolated can still communicate with each other. And that's non-locality, because the communication is independent of each other and it fires in the other one. Okay, so we know that happens. So now your vibration is important, because, yeah, if you do something with a low vibration in the morning, that low vibration will come and hit you. Okay, so you're not punished for your sins, Hawaiians. Okay, you're not punished for your sins. You're punished by your sins. Okay, so just know that. My uncle used to tell me years ago, we used to have these conversations in my 20s, when I was in my turbulent 20s, right? And I wanted to have someone just really roughed up and whatever. And my uncle goes, nope. And I was hanging out with, like, some premium gangsters, right? And I could very easily go, hey, you know, Eddie, you know, da 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 da, and then whatever. And it would be taken care of. I mean, it really would. And my uncle's going, no, you don't want to do that. Don't do that. And so my uncle, who was my first mentor, actually, from 13, he was the one that really kept the lid on that and really kept me from bachi, like huge bachi, right? Because you don't do that. So what I teach my clients, okay, is the rules of engagement. Okay, and there are rules of engagement. There are vibrational rules of engagement. So I put it to them this way, okay, and I'm going to put it to you now. So you have two people playing tennis, okay, one on the left, one on the right. The one on the right serves the ball. The one on the left just stands there. The ball goes in the court, scores a point, bounces out of the court. The guy on the left just stood there, okay? So question, who holds the power? I'll wait. Yep, think about it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, that was my excuse to drink water.
Okay.
So, all right. So did you figure it out? Yeah, the guy on the left. Why? Well, some people argue, right? And this happens like with my new clients, this happens a lot. They go, oh no, the guy on the right, because he scored a point. And I'm like, yeah, he scored the point, but there's no game. You see? There's no game, Hawaiians, okay? So when you score the point, okay, you can score a point all you want. When somebody argues with you, okay, if you argue back, game on, right? If you don't argue back, if you become the observer and just like, whatever, that kind of thing, right? There's no game. There's no energy feeding the other energy, you see? So at that point, right, it diffuses everything, okay? Because you can't, eventually, you have to be really, like, solid, I want to say, and of sound mind and character to do it, because, yeah, you have to. So what we do is we do our vocalization exercises with them, with our clients, and when we do our vocalization exercises with them, it allows that kind of calm, that kind of peace where they just stand there. And they'll just stand there like Buddhist monks. And, you know, I mean, if you're a Buddhist monk, please don't take offense to that. I'm just saying, right? But that's the kind of discipline that they have. But the discipline doesn't come from being strict on yourself. The discipline comes from being at peace with yourself. The self-discipline comes from being relaxed with yourself. Because if you're all hyped up and you're all wired up and you're all, right, you know, in that state, okay, that state of mind, then when somebody triggers you, you are going to snap. It's pure and simple, just like that. I mean, you're going to snap. Now, if you can become the observer, what happens? Well, then there's no game. Then you can just, yeah, there's no game. Okay, so people think, like I've had a lot of clients that get divorces, right? And the majority of my clients are female, okay? I just got to tell you, the majority, okay? Because I think it's because women really are seeking confidence because they really want to win. Because, you know, women are the ones going to college, getting the degrees. Women are the ones that are continuing school. I mean, I'm not saying that guys don't do it, okay? I'm saying that, you know, I have noticed, like, a lot of women, so locally, right? You get the girl that's, I don't know, the legal secretary downtown, right? She's driving around surfer dude, right? Buying him stuff. And he, you know, he's riding in the passenger seat of the car. I mean, you know, that kind of guy. And he's down at the beach surfing all day. And she's working hard at the lawyer's office. That kind of thing. That's what I'm talking about, right? And then so she's also trying to level up and get better and earn more and whatever. And a lot of these girls earn a lot of money. And you know what happens? They end up buying their love. So if I had a daughter, see, I don't have a daughter, but if I had one, I would teach her two things. Number one, do not ever, ever depend on a man. Number two, never, ever, ever under any circumstances buy your love. Don't buy your love. I just told one of my clients this the other day. I told her, I said, don't do that. Don't get caught up in that trap. Don't feel that you have to bow in order to retain love. Because here's the thing, Hawaiians, right? It will come. Love comes and love goes, okay? Now, if you're lucky and love hangs around, you know, for a long time and you guys are together forever or whatever, then so be it, okay? Then you guys are good workers because it takes a lot of work to do that. Okay, I'm not willing to do that kind of work, Hawaiians. I'm just not. There's certain kinds of work that I do. I mean, I do the podcast. You know, I work my buns off. But yeah, there's certain kinds of work I'm not willing to do. Okay, but I will tell you that when you put in the work with yourself, when you put in the work, and when you start doing this vocalization exercises that we do, and breathing exercises, one of them is called transient hypofrontality. Okay, so that's a thing. And what it does, so the frontality is talking about your frontal lobe of your brain. Okay, so transient hypofrontality, hypo, to slow down, right? It slows down your thought process. Okay, so a lot of people have anxiety right now, okay? We're going to get to the politics in a second. So well, let's say more of the politics. So a lot of people have anxiety, and this is because, right, there's all these wars going on. There's all these political things going on. It's all politics. It's all, and there's a lot of saber rattling going on. Yeah, we're going to blow up the world. Yeah, World War III, you know, whatever. Everybody's all like keyed up, right? So there's a lot of anxiety. Not only that, but on the bottom side of society, like the average minimum wage worker, right? Inflation is going so high they can hardly survive. So yeah, there's a lot of anxiety. Yeah, I get a lot of clients. Yeah, a lot of people are freaked out. So, you know, and that's why we put up a training program, okay? And the training program is like $9. That's it. You pay $9, you're in the training program, okay? And there's a link, and we will put, it's on the website. You can go to the website. It's hereforyoulifecoaching.com/masterclass, and you can actually have access to the videos for $9. I mean, it's that simple. But here's the thing, right? And it talks about a lot of stuff that I'm talking about now. Not so much today on the podcast, but like the stuff I talk about on the podcast, it goes into greater detail and it gives you solutions. Okay. Because you can't put a band-aid on anxiety. You have to get rid of it. Okay. Now you have to accept the thoughts you're thinking. You have to be okay with the thoughts you're thinking. Okay. Because you can't just expect to be well or expect to be, in a good mood or chill or whatever when you're allowing thoughts to take over your life. Your brain will, your mind actually will attack you. Okay. If you're not applying your mind to something constructive, it will attack you. And what happens when it attacks you? Well, things happen. You have maybe your paradigm is a little, off, right? Maybe your paradigm is a little, you know, let's say out of whack, or maybe you think, you know, some people get paranoid. Yeah. Some people's thoughts attack them and then they start to question themselves. They start to question their existence and, you know, like, okay, what am I here for? What? And pretty soon, guess what happens? Yeah. Suicide is a thing. That happens. A lot of things like that happen. Okay. And it's happening to younger and younger people. Okay. I'm treating younger clients now. I mean, some of my clients are like 19, 20, 21 years old, you know, that kind of thing. And what's happening is they don't know any other way. Okay. Now I know I have a lot of 19, 20 year olds listening. Okay. Cause I see the stats. So I'm telling you guys, when it gets bad, when it feels okay, because it's a feeling, when it feels like there's no recourse, okay, when it feels like there's no coming back, when it feels like, hey, what am I alive for? I don't want to go through 40 more years of this or 50 more years of this or whatever it is, right? Okay, no, stop. You can turn this around. You can turn your life around. I turned my life around for Christmas sakes. I turned my life around, and you can too. You know, I was in my 20s. I was in a tailspin. I was violent. I was around some very violent people. I was, you know, and it, so it was normal for us at that vibration. Okay, it was normal. So, you know, I was with some of these the gangsters. I mean, they would think. They were nice. Don't get me wrong. They were nice people. They took good care of me. They really took good care of me. But here's the thing, right? They would think nothing of neutralizing a situation if it called for it, because that was their job. And I'm talking about just extinguishing something or someone because they had to, because it, you know, whatever. There's a job description, right? I'm not going to get into it, but I'm just saying. So those were the kind of people that I ran with in my 20s. And for a long time in my 20s, I had no connection to my family. I cut off everything. And I did the cutting off. I did it myself. And I did it on purpose. I did it deliberately because I wanted to see how the other half lived. And I learned, you know, that first night I slept in the alley, right? Because I slept on the street for a couple nights. I mean, a couple months. And I'll never forget the first night in the alley. I stayed up as long as I could. And there weren't, you know, this was in the very, very beginning of that chapter, right? And I was like, I think I was 20 years old. And I had been working security and whatever. And I quit my job, whatever, quit everything. And I went downtown. to this place called Chinatown in Hawaii. And I'm sure a lot of cities have Chinatowns, right? So I was in our Chinatown, right? And I was in that alley. And I stayed up like till like 4:45, something like that, like almost dawn, until I couldn't stay up anymore. And I was sitting down talking to this guy. And he's no longer with us. And he passed away. But I was sitting down talking to Steve. And I was like, wow, man. You know, and I was asking him, like, hey, what happens around here? Like, you know, because he was on the street before me. He goes, no big deal, whatever. And in my head, in my mind, right, I was thinking, like, wow, I could get killed down here. This is dangerous. I mean, and it was dangerous. I mean, if you think it's dangerous now, it was even more dangerous back then. I want to say it was less regulated as far as police control, right? There was no substation downtown. We have a substation in Chinatown right now. That didn't exist. That wasn't even a thing. It was like it came way later. But so I was in that alley, right? And I was slowly falling asleep. And I remember just passing out. And I couldn't stay up anymore. And I just passed out, you know? And when I woke up, I was like, oh, you know, I woke up because the sun was shining in my face, right? And I woke up because the sun was shining. It was like 6:15, 6:20 in the morning, something like that. And the sun hit me. And the sun woke me up, and I got up, and I was like, oh, I'm alive. I was like that. I mean, it was spooky that first night. I was like, whoa, I'm alive, you know? And so I was grateful, you know, I was like, thank God, thank you, God, thank you. You know, I was like that, right? I was giving thanks and whatever, but, you know, and I still didn't know anything about the law of attraction. I didn't learn that till 2008, okay? This was back in the 80s. This was, okay, I don't tell you how old I am, but yeah, uncle is not 30. All right, so anyway, but yeah, but that happened, okay? So I worked my way up in life. So what you see online, what you see of me and my companies and whatever it is, whatever. I'm not flexing. I'm just saying, right? Everything you see came from the sidewalk up, okay? It came from that alley that I passed out in because I was too tired, right? It came from there up, okay? And at a certain point, you know, things were mended with my family. At a certain point, you know, I got to tell you, I am stubborn. And my family, I come from a stubborn family. We're all stubborn in our own right, okay? And I had to humble myself and go, okay, I was wrong. I'm sorry. You know, I had to do that. I had to do that because my uncle was telling me, no, you know, I said sorry to him first. And then he's like, well, you got to go tell your parents. And then, you know, and then I had to humble myself, right? Because that was the thing to do. Right. And then now, you know, like one of the highest compliments I ever got from my mom was I picked her up at the airport one time. Right. And I come in, you know, I come rolling into the airport in my Mercedes. Right. And she goes, you know, I don't know. I forget how she said it. I said it on another podcast. But, you know, she said something to the effect of, I never thought that you would be picking me up at the airport in a Mercedes. And she was so happy. I mean, you know, and she said it sincerely. And I'm like, whoa. And then, you know, that kind of made me go, hey, does she have a fever? You know, I mean, my mom is strict. My mom is old school. She's strict. And I was very happy that she was not my friend and that she was my mother. Think about that one, right? A lot of parents want to be friends with their kids. Your kids are not your buddies. I'm here to tell you. Mm-hmm. And some people think, right, they think that, oh, okay, yeah, me and my kids, we're just going to be buddies. No, you have to be the example. You have to be the leader. You can't be a friend. Well, being a friend suggests that you're equal. You're not equal. You are the leader. You are the parent. You are the example. You set the bar, right? And children follow. And believe me, you know, I follow. And my parents are role models for me, both of them. Right. And I follow and I look at what they did and I go, okay, they did that. Okay, good. That's what I should do. And I follow and I, you know, like that. And in this case of teaching, right, I ran from teaching. I did a podcast on it. I ran from teaching. I did not want to teach. I did not want to be a life coach. I did not want to be a singing instructor. I did not want to be a voice teacher. None of that at all. I wanted to stand on the stage and do six nights a week, right? Two shows a night, the same show model, right? That I saw growing up. Did that work? No. It worked for a little while, but it worked in a different way. Did I get a big contract? No. God gave me a wedding and party business. And it just happened. It happened because people were calling up the radio station going, hey, can you sing for my baby party? Hey, can you sing for my graduation, my kid's graduation? Hey, can you do the, hey, can you do it? And I had to build the company to accommodate the requests, okay? And that was God protecting me. I swear that was God protecting me. That was God going, okay, we're going to give you this and you're going to be happy with this because you're going to stay away from those guys, right? And those guys just, you know, it was the record companies, it was organized crime, it was all this stuff that's happening in this town, okay? And the politics of it, okay? The politics of it were that, yeah, you come and you sign with us and we'll make you famous, right? But guess what? These guys that they made famous, these guys that did, I don't know, 3-4 albums, some of them, I know one that did like 30 albums, you know, and they kept, you know, making money for the record company. Now, the record company takes the majority of the money. Do you think these guys were complaining? No, they had 30 albums. They had 30, whatever. I don't know exactly how much, but I'm just saying, you know, they, no, and they had work and they performed. And that's what performers do. You got to know that. You got to know that if somebody gave me the opportunity, like, hey, we're going to pay all your bills going to be paid. You know, you're not going to make $1 million, but all your bills are going to be paid and you can live in the mansion and we'll give you a Lamborghini and we'll give you a Ferrari too. Yeah, we'll let you use them, you know, because they lease it for tax write-offs, right? And if they said, hey, we'll let you do all of this here, we'll give you all of that. And then we'll give you a little stipend, right? We'll give you a little spending money every month. Would you do it? Hey, I would sign on the dotted line, Hawaiians. I would sign because that's what I love to do, okay? Now, let's back it up a step, okay? Is that what my life purpose is? No, that's not my life purpose. That was the life purpose of the people that I saw growing up. That was their life purpose. You know, I got to say, and I'm not flexing with this statement. I just got to tell you because this is the truth. When my attorney, I was talking to my attorney one day, right? And my attorney is this, he's a top-notch corporate, this guy is like, He's big time. He's huge. He's multi-million dollar attorney kind of thing. But he was talking. We were talking one day and I told him, I said, you know, this is not my dream. And we were standing in my office and I said, you know, cause he came down, we were talking and I said, this was not my dream. I said, I did this for my friend who was blind. I built a school for my friend. He was blind. He needed something to do. So we both do this. And then, you know, I do the shows and he does the shows with me. And that's how the school was built. And he goes, well, what was your dream? And I said, my dream was working 6 days a week, two shows a night with an orchestra, doing a show with dancers and you know, and having fun and doing that. And he said, Junior, you're too smart for that. And okay, I'm not flexing. That's the exact words that came out of my attorney's mouth. But because it came out of his mouth, I was like, whoa. Like, okay, all right. Because I had a hard time accepting teaching. I had a hard time accepting my real role and my real life purpose, which is teaching. You know, and here's what Steve Harvey said about goals. And what Steve Harvey says about your gift. He said, your gift is something that you do, right? With the least amount of effort. With the least amount of effort, you just do it and it just, and that's it. And it's easily done. And you keep doing it and you repeat it. And you get wealthy and you get blessings and you get blah, 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 like that. And that's true. Okay. So what I do with my clients is I ask them, all right, look, if you didn't have to make money, because I have clients that are top-notch professionals, right? I asked one of my clients who's an attorney. I said, okay, if money, you know, everybody shoots for something that makes money in college, right? You're trying to find something that makes money. You know, some people want to be nurses and doctors and lawyers and whatever. I said, if you chose something off the wall that you just love to do, what would that be, right? And sometimes, normally, when I first ask that question, I get like an I don't know. Oh, geez, I don't know. because they have to think about it, right? Okay, in my case, I felt that little tug, you know, when I started teaching, when I opened the school back in 1989, I opened the school. I had a production company first, then I opened the school, then I did the consulting company, and it kind of, you know, wedding and party business, then, yeah, actually the wedding and party business first, then the consulting company, then the record company. So it just went one by one by one by one. So, but deep inside, right, when I started teaching, I would sit in the in my chair in the corner. So I had this chair in the corner where I used to teach. And I used to try to imagine myself enjoying it. Because to me, like, and I don't get me wrong, I enjoyed teaching whoever it is I was teaching. But I built, in my mind, I built the school for my friend. Right. So I would be there kind of like assisting, whatever. And we taught together. So he would warm up the clients and then I would go in and teach. And so, you know, in a half hour, we probably, you know, 15 minutes kind of thing. And so I would take turns. And meanwhile, I would be building in the digital world on my laptop at my desk. And so back and forth, back and forth, back and forth like that. And so but I had built a school for him. So in my mind, I was like, nah, no, I'm the stage guy. I'm the entertainment guy. Well, guess what happened? In 2019, when I closed down the business, right, I was heartbroken. I was heartbroken that I had to give it up. But I knew in my heart of hearts, like way down deep inside, I knew that, yeah, okay, you got to give in. You got to teach. You got to go back. You got to teach. You just got to keep teaching. And something fundamentally happened with Howard Hughes, who was once the richest man in the world, okay? And a lot of things happened to good old Howard. He became very, very paranoid and extremely reclusive. But here's what he did. He started to decline in income when he sold the tool company that was owned by his father that brought in the original, you know, if you want to say good luck, or in Hawaii we say mana, but that company, okay, because he wasn't into the tool company. It was Hughes Tool Company. He wasn't into it. He wanted to be an aviator. There's a movie called The Aviator. It's about Howard Hughes. Go watch it. It's cool. And so he didn't want to do that. So he sold the tool company. He wanted to be in Vegas. He was buying casinos. He was doing all kinds of stuff. He bought all that land that you see in Las Vegas, right? That whole thing, the Summa Corporation, that's his company. It's still here. We have the Hughes Company down here in Honolulu, Howard Hughes Company. That's all a branch of the same thing, okay? It's just one big octopus with different tentacles. That's all that is. But when he sold the foundation, when he sold the tool company, that's when everything started to decline slowly. And it just kind of went downhill, downhill, and so did his health, downhill, downhill. And he died on an airplane, on his jet, on the way to a hospital from the Bahamas. And he, you know, he passed away because of kidneys. Something was wrong with his kidneys. But anyway, so moral of the story, right, is that what I wanted to say was that I always hung out and I always hung on to the school because deep inside, yeah, I know that, yeah, my life's purpose is teaching, right? So no matter, you know, what I build, no matter what I get into, because Lord knows I get into stuff and I start building and, you know, we go, okay, let's do that. Right. No matter what happens, I will always teach. I will always have the singing school. And it's called Voice Master Vocal Development. You can look us up online. It's a thing. And I will always have Here For You Life Coaching. So you can go look that up, too. But my point is, yeah, you have your foundation. You have your life purpose. And despite all the politics and all the people that try to push you around and all the people who try to take a crap on you and all the people who are jealous of you and whatever, all those kinds of people and those kinds of things, it all goes away. Because why? Because you stick to your purpose and in the end you win because you're serving your purpose. And when you serve your purpose, I'm here to tell you that you... Oh, sorry, Hawaiians. I gotta go. But yeah, when you're serving your purpose, you're in alignment with the divine, okay? We'll talk about that on the next podcast. That's not a podcast, Hawaii.
Hey, so our sponsors, Islet Club and Spa, Brother Randy and Sister Jerry, would like to say mahalo, mahalo. Thank you very much. And, down there in Kaka'ako, I love that location. Boy, I'm going to go down there tomorrow. Tomorrow morning, first thing. Yep. Hey, we also want to say a mahalo to Voicemaster Family of Service Companies. You can look them up online, Voicemaster Enterprises, LLC. Also, we'd like to say mahalo to AFM Hawaii Music. Yeah, Brother Darren Chinen and his music. Check it out. Till next time, I'm Junior Kekoeva Jr. saying mahalo and aloha.